in fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
CRIMEWAV. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit.
Consider yourselves warned.
Phoenix Nightlife by Jason Duke, Part 4. 12:37 a.m. The brown Lexus pulled into the NJ Liquor parking lot. The streets were quiet, empty. There was only the distant murmur of the nightlife carried on the wind. Even with the windows rolled up, Papa and Malcolm still heard it. So why this place? Malcolm scanned the vacant streets. I was still at the strip club when they showed up at the store. I'd been downing shots of Cuervo to try and forget Cynthia when I noticed the time. Big Papa parked the Lexus in the farthest parking space from the store. The limo tint on the windows reflected the harsh white light spilling out of the storefront. The light reached out into the parking lot, stopping short of the Lexus like it was something the light was scared to touch. I used to own this place back in the day when I was dealing rock, Papa said. His gaze fell on the Iranian clerk inside the store behind the counter. See the Iranian behind the counter? Yeah, Malcolm said. Recognize him? Yeah, he was at the warehouse earlier. His name's Stevie, Papa said. You know how I got a couple pigs on the payroll, right? Malcolm nodded his head. Word got to me that 5-0 had the store under surveillance, so I sold it to Stevie's father. How did the cops catch on? There ain't nothing to bring them around here except the club, Malcolm said. 5-0 expects a nigga to keep his shit in the hood. As soon as a black man opens up a shop outside the ghetto, they're all over him, putting him under a microscope, Papa said. For all they knew, I could have been an average citizen trying to run a business. I made my entrance, walking around to the front of the store. I had stopped to take another piss in the alley. When you're high on coke, your heart beats an average of 28 times faster. Malcolm got out of the Lexus. He walked to the driver's side. The driver's side door opened and Papa lumbered out. Papa followed behind Malcolm with the Smith & Wesson 357 Magnum pointed at his back. Right now, I couldn't feel my heart beat at all. Yeah, that's right, Papa said. You in a world of shit. Papa, man, whatever it is, I said, but he cut me off. What it is this nigga lost 50 grand worth of my product tonight when the pigs raided his house right after you left. What? I said. Did I stutter? I said the 50 grand I lost. Papa smacked Malcolm upside the head with the gun barrel. He wiped the barrel on Malcolm's shirt. When the pigs raided this nigga's house right after you left. I looked to Malcolm. What the fuck's going on, Malcolm? Don't play stupid, Papa said. Papa, I swear, man, I don't, I said, but he cut me off again. Shut the fuck up. I'm tired of both of y'all excuses. As far as I'm concerned, you both ended me for 50 large. Papa looked at the store, to Stevie who was watching us now, squinting his eyes in the bright light to see what was going on. But I know how you two are going to pay me back. Malcolm and I both looked to the store, then to each other. Papa's words sank in and I realized what he wanted us to do. Come on, Papa, you aren't serious, man. Shouldn't we plan this shit out first? Say one more word, Rob, and your ass is going to be the first to get smoked. Papa shoved Malcolm hard toward the store. We walked up to the store with Papa following behind us. He gave Malcolm another hard shove, and Malcolm stumbled forward into the middle of the entrance, triggering the door buzzer. Can I help you with something? Stevie said. I squeezed around Malcolm. The buzzer was obnoxious, non-stop, worse than the tone on an emergency alert system test. Papa shouldered Malcolm out of the way and pointed the 357 at Stevie. Time's up, Stevie. Stevie threw his hands up in the air. Papa, wait. Papa walked to the counter. He smiled and nodded, feigning interest. I almost have the money. I just need one more day, Stevie said. Stevie shrank back toward the liquor shelves the closer Papa got. Papa walked around behind the counter and pistol-whipped Stevie in the head. Go get the security tape, Papa said, but Malcolm just stared. Papa started kicking Stevie. The loud bone-cracking percussion thumped through the store. What the fuck you waiting for, nigga? Malcolm hurried to a door at the back of the store next to the coolers. He disappeared through the door into the storage area and back, spotted a 15-inch JVC TV with built-in VHS player set atop a metal pushcart shoved against the far wall. He ejected the tape and ran back out to the front where Papa had emptied all the cash out of the register into a brown paper bag. You get it? Papa said. Yeah, Malcolm showed Papa the tape. God damn, Stevie, we in the 21st century now and you still using VHS. Papa rolled up the paper bag and sealed it shut. He knelt next to a small safe behind the counter, pointing the .357 to Stevie's head. "What's the combination?" "It's the same. I haven't changed it," Stevie moaned. Papa opened the safe. He shoveled a few small stacks of 20s and 100s into another paper bag. He cocked back the hammer. "Any last words?" "Come on, man," I said. Papa looked at me. "You got the money. Let's just go." "What'd you say?" Papa walked back around the counter, up to me. "I'm just saying you got the money. There's no reason to smoke 'em." "Shit, Rob, you absolutely right." Papa feigned another smile. Then he pistol-whipped me in the head. Everything went dark and I dropped to the floor. "Come on, Papa, let's go," Malcolm said. When Papa said we can pay him back by robbing the liquor store, he never meant with the money. Papa wheeled the .357 on Malcolm. "Nigga, you gonna die along with him." Cleaning out the register in the safe only came to a few grand, which didn't come close to covering the 50 large we owed. Papa had it all planned from the start. Kill us and Stevie and make it look like a botched robbery. Malcolm squeezed his eyes shut. He heard a gunshot blast through the store and a thud like a heavy body falling over the counter. He opened his eyes in time to see Papa slump over the register. The .357 slid across the counter, onto the floor, near his feet. Lucky for us, Papa wasn't paying attention to Stevie. "Piece of shit," Stevie leaned against the counter. He wiped at the blood leaking down the side of his face. Smoke billowed from the barrel of the Taurus 38 Special he pointed at Papa, and there was a second where all he could think about was emptying the other 5 rounds. Malcolm saw Stevie was distracted and dived for the .357. Malcolm grabbed up the gun as Stevie aimed the Taurus and fired. A hole blew open in the floor next to Malcolm, and a cloud of speckled epoxy-coated cement shrapnel flew at his face. The .357 roared through the store and decorated the cigarette rack with the back of Stevie's head. Stevie crashed backward into the shelves of liquor, bottles smashing against the floor with him. Malcolm slowly stood. He stared at what was left of Stevie's head dripping off the cigarette rack. Up the street, he heard tires screech and a police siren well over the distant murmur of the city. One of the rolled paper bags of money lay on the counter where Papa had dropped it. 12:48 a.m. Hounser saw the vagrant hunched over the shopping cart in the middle of the street. He slowed down and pulled the unmarked police cruiser up next to the vagrant. He shined a maglight at the greasy cardboard sign hanging from the side of the cart, then into the old man's face. "Sir, I need you to take your shopping cart to the sidewalk." The vagrant grunted, but he didn't budge. His bloodshot eyes stared into the harsh white light. "Sir, did you hear me?" Hounser said. 3 gunshots echoed over the street. Hounser looked to the NJ Liquor parking lot ahead. "Get on the sidewalk now and wait there." He switched on the siren and slammed the gas pedal to the floor. The police cruiser peeled out, fishtailing up the street. Malcolm sprinted out of the store toward the Stardust Lounge, brown rolled up paper bag in one hand and .357 in the other. He heard the police cruiser chasing after him, turned and fired 2 shots into the windshield. The cruiser was closing the gap fast, and Malcolm knew he wouldn't make it to the Stardust in time. The bullets punched through the glass at the center. Hounser ducked down behind the steering wheel, swerving the cruiser. He looked back up and saw Malcolm make it to the Stardust parking lot, where the 2 cops that had tailed me and Carl to the club got out and took cover behind their unmarked car. One of the cops shouted, "Police!" and Malcolm answered with 2 more shots into the side of their car. The cops ducked down, then popped up and returned fire, their bullets exploding around him. He made it to the front door of the club and disappeared inside. Hounser's cruiser jumped the parking lot curb, screeching to a stop into the back end of Tony's parked Corvette. The cops ran over to him as he stumbled out, but he waved them off. "One of you cover the back." 12:49 a.m. Malcolm stopped to catch his breath on the other side of the door. The music was loud and no one had heard the gunshots. He hid the .357 under his shirt, mixing with the crowd. House of Pain salutations blared over the loudspeakers as the men that were crowded around the dance stage whistled and hollered for the next stripper to come through the black curtains at the back. The DJ leaned down to the mic. "You've been waiting for her all night, star of the Stardust Lounge. Give it up for the lovely Irish goddess, Aval." The opening horn intro of Jump Around pierced the club. The song incited the crowd to a fever pitch, and a fiery, pissed-off redhead with pale freckled skin burst through the curtains. Malcolm saw Carl near the foot of the stage whistling at the stripper. He waded through the crowd and snatched Carl's arm from behind. "It's me. Don't turn around," Malcolm said. "Malcolm?" Carl tensed. "What are you doing here, bro?" "Never mind that shit. Your Explorer parked outside?" "Yeah, why?" Carl said. Malcolm yanked Carl around to face him. He lifted his shirt, flashing the gun handle. "Come on, let's go." "What the hell's going on, bro? Where's Rob?" "Forget Rob." Malcolm shoved Carl toward the back of the club. "Did you hear me? I said we got to go." Malcolm looked to the front door and saw Hounser enter the club with one of the cops. 12:51 a.m. Hounser scanned around, but there were too many places in the crowd to hide. I'll make my way toward the back door, Howenzer said to the cop. He motioned to the men's bathroom. You check the bathroom. He muscled his way through the crowd, pushing against the chunky black man who was a cross between Biggie Smalls and a black Buddha. What is it with you chumps tonight? The man grabbed Howenzer by his collar. Howenzer flashed his badge. I'm a cop. The black man let go. Through the crowd, Howenzer saw Malcolm and Carl at the back door. Carl opened the door and Malcolm shoved them outside. AM. Carl staggered outside, half coked up, half drunk. The cop that had gone around to cover the back drew down on Carl with a Beretta. Police! Get down on the ground! Carl flinched away and took a step back, nearly tripping over Malcolm as he came through the back door. Malcolm shoved Carl forward, into the cop, and there was a sharp crack from the Beretta. The cop fell on his back and Carl collapsed on top of him. Malcolm heard the gunshot and stopped. The cop pushed out from under Carl, working the gun free. The cop raised the Beretta and Malcolm shot him between the eyes. His face folded in on itself simultaneous with an eruption of blood, brain, and pieces of skull spraying up in the air like a fountainhead. The blood spurted up for a few seconds, then leveled off into a steady leak. Malcolm dropped the gun, staring at the caved hole in the cop's face. I need a hospital, bro. Carl wiped the gore from his face. He tried to hold back the blood squirting from the gunshot wound in his stomach. Malcolm snapped back to reality. Come on, where you parked? He helped Carl up, steadying Carl on his feet. Carl's Armani was soaked red and he tried to wring out the blood. Where you parked? Malcolm said again. Carl started shaking. He pointed around the side of the club to the parking lot, ready to pass out, but Malcolm dragged him around the side of the club to the back of the parking lot. I need a hospital, Malcolm. Where is it? Carl pointed to the Explorer. His eyes rolled into his head. Malcolm felt him go limp and let him drop to the ground. I'm leaving this motherfucker with or without you, Malcolm knelt down. He rifled through Carl's pockets for the keys. 12:53 a.m. Howenzer shouldered open the back door and ducked to the side. He crouched low, peered around the corner of the door, and saw the faceless cop lying in a red puddle pool around him. The Explorer started up out in the parking lot. Howenzer rushed around the side of the club where Malcolm was inside the Explorer starting the engine. He ran full sprint at the Explorer, gun drawn, and Malcolm revved the engine. The tires squealed and the Explorer screeched out of the parking space. Malcolm gunned the Explorer at Howenzer. Howenzer steadied his Glock 22. The Explorer rumbled toward him. He fired into the windshield, leapt and rolled to the side. The Explorer raced past, smashing through the taillight of Tony's Corvette. Howenzer jumped to his feet. He chased after the Explorer, firing two more shots to the missing back window. The Explorer launched into the street and tilted on two wheels in a sharp turn that steered it toward NJ Liquor. Malcolm looked over his shoulder out the back window and saw Howenzer chasing after him. I told you, motherfucker! I told you! The headlights flashed across the vagrant in the street. The Explorer plowed into him and his body flipped up over the hood, mangled and broken, into the windshield. The shopping cart twisted under the chassis in a shower of sparks. The cardboard sign smacked against the windshield, then his face. The glass cracked and his mashed face smeared across the windshield, gluing the sign in place. Malcolm screamed like a bitch. The mess was thick, like congealed red paint splashed across the windshield. The sign stayed fixed in place, and the large words and black marker stared in at Malcolm along with the rest of the bum's face. An eyeball hung out of the socket, dangled on the windshield for a second before it popped loose, and Malcolm screamed again. God forgives those who walk the path to redemption. The Explorer's brakes locked up and it swerved off the street, into a streetlight. The horn wailed nonstop into the night. Howenzer stopped running, out of breath. He looked to the Explorer. The way the Explorer had crashed into the pole, it had veered sideways, and his vantage point was angled on the rear end of the passenger side. Smoke rose out of the front, the hood mashed and wrinkled. The horn went silent, and Howenzer started running again. He ran past NJ Liquor, to the Explorer halfway up the street. The impact had thrown the bum against the streetlight, where his body lay upright, splayed against the pole. Howenzer peered inside the cab with his Glock, through the shattered passenger window. The driver's side door was open, completely wrecked, and Malcolm was gone. The body of Verse was slumped over the steering wheel instead. His head collided with the steering wheel, split open. Blood leaked down the side of his face. His eyes stared blankly ahead at the sign still plastered to the outside of the windshield. God forgives those who walk the path to redemption. Howenzer leaned on the ruined hood to catch his breath. He looked back inside the cab, to the driver's side, and the seat was empty. 12:57 a.m. I heard the horn up the street and came to. Footsteps pounded the street outside, someone running toward the store, and I saw Howenzer run past. I ducked down, waiting until he got to the Explorer, then slipped out through the back. Sirens wailed in the distance. They were getting closer fast as I made my way along the side of the liquor store, up the street to the Stardust to find Carl, making sure to stay out of Howenzer's line of sight. I got to the parking lot and ducked behind cars into the quasi-light of streetlights. Ambulances, patrol cars, and a fire truck raced by the parking lot and stopped where the Explorer had wrecked. "Rob, help me, bro," Carl moaned. I looked around and saw him between some parked cars where he had crawled after Malcolm left him. He was pale, clammy. He sat with his back against the tire, his hand still clutched to the gunshot wound in his stomach. Most of his blood had leaked onto the ground. "Carl? Jesus Christ, what happened?" I said. I reached for his blood-soaked Armani, but I pulled my hand away before touching it. "You're not that bad. I saw some ambulances up the street. We just gotta get you to them." I tried to lift Carl onto his feet. He cried out, and I knew moving him might kill him. "Here, I'm setting you back down. Is that better?" "I'm sorry for tonight, bro," he said. He took my hand and held it. "We're good friends, right?" "Yeah, we're good friends," I said. He closed his eyes and tears drained down his face. His hand went limp. He opened his eyes one last time, staring up at me with a vacant look. "I'm sorry, too." I let go of his hand and closed his eyes. I heard footsteps running toward the parking lot. I didn't want it to end this way. 12:58 a.m. The cop inched open the door to the men's bathroom. He heard Tony breathing heavy in the last stall and a smacking sound like skin on skin. The cop moved to the stall. He raised his foot to kick in the door, then decided against it. He set his foot back down, slowly opened the door, and saw Tony inside fucking Cynthia's corpse in the ass. "Police, don't move!" The cop shoved his gun into the back of Tony's neck. Startled, Tony spun around. Blood slopped off of his dick and the cop jumped back. Tony zipped up his pants, catching his balls in the zipper. He screamed and started clawing at the zipper, but the cop just dragged him out of the stall to the floor and cuffed him. "Serves you right, you sick fuck." The cop reported in over a portable radio. 416, I have one female dead inside the bathroom and one male suspect. Bringing the suspect out, over. He lifted Tony up. "Come on, asshole." The cop shoved Tony through the bathroom door. The crowd quieted down outside and the music stopped, but Tony was still screaming. With all the coke Cynthia had snorted, she should have died. Cynthia's legs suddenly twitched. She was clinically dead for 37 seconds, until Tony heaved her into the stall, and the sudden jolt when she hit the toilet jump-started her heart. Her legs twitched again, and she fell over sideways against the stall between the toilet, sucking in a loud, deep breath, her eyes wide and panicked. She scrambled over to the wall beneath the sinks. Tony thought he was fucking a freshly dead corpse the whole time, and this was how he made headlines on CNN. She looked around and realized the bathroom was empty. Her ass throbbed. Disgusted with herself, she rinsed out her mouth in the sink. She stared at the mirror, looking like a 37-second-old corpse that got fucked in the ass. She washed up in the sink as best she could and staggered out of the bathroom. 1:03 a.m. The red and blue lights of all the emergency vehicles twirled over the wrecked Explorer. The cops finished cordoning the area with crime scene tape. Another patrol car pulled up next to the ambulances and fire truck crowded in the street. A police chopper buzzed overhead, scanning back and forth with a spotlight. More patrol cars were parked at each end of the street and headed off the news trucks that had already started to arrive. Howenzer watched the paramedics peel the bum's body from the streetlight. Two of the paramedics, name tags of Jackson and Cruz, loaded the body onto a gurney. What a mess. Jackson covered the body with a sheet. They loaded the gurney into an ambulance. You think I'd be used to this kind of thing by now, but it never seems to get easier. We get at least one fatality call a night. Cruz shut the door. It's worse on the weekends, naturally. It's never easy, but you get used to it, Howenzer said. There was an awkward silence. Yeah, well, typical night for me, Cruz said. When will these guys learn that it's safer just to settle down and raise a family? Don't let him fool you. He was a wild man in his day, Jackson said. Howenzer looked at Cruz. No one's safe. There was another awkward silence. I used to think they were just statistics. Then something happened to make me think maybe they were more. If given the chance, maybe they would take it and turn things around. But I was wrong. Why's that? Cruz said. In the end, everybody's a statistic. They just don't know it yet. Well, after working as a paramedic for over 20 years, Cruz said, and having seen as much as I have, I would tend to agree, but I don't think anyone intends for that to happen. No one wants to end up that way. A voice sputtered over his portable radio, 416, respond. 416, over. We have two fatalities in the back of the club, the voice said over the radio. One's an officer, and a third fatality inside the club. Please assist. Jackson and Cruz loaded their gear back into the ambulance. Some of the cops who had been combing the area stood outside NJ Liquor. Hey, one of the cops yelled. We got two more dead in here. Cruz looked to Howenzer. The way things are going tonight, you might be right. 1:12 a.m. I sat at the bar downing shots of Cuervo, trying to forget everything that happened tonight. No one had seen me when I snuck back in the club through the back door. I decided my best chance to get away clean was to blend with the crowd inside the club and lay low until things quieted down. The music had stopped and everyone was talking about the prick the cops had hauled off in cuffs with his balls caught in a zipper. Even when the cops came into the club and started questioning us, the bartender kept serving shots. "What's your name?" A cop had gotten around to the bar and was talking to the two guys who had been sitting in the stools next to me. "Victor Bank." "And your name?" "Mike Elroy." The cops scribbled their names into a notepad. "Did you hear any of the gunshots or see anything?" "Nah, I didn't hear a thing," Victor said. "Yeah," Mike said. "The music was so loud, I don't think anybody heard anything." "I didn't realize nothing had happened until you guys showed up and pulled that guy out of the bathroom in handcuffs with his nuts caught in a zipper," Victor said. I watched as some of the cops went in and out of the men's bathroom. "What about you?" the cop said to me. "I suppose you didn't see or hear anything." "Sorry," I said. "I've been sitting here the whole time." 1:34 a.m. The crowd spilled out of the club, got in their cars, or called cabs. I slipped away through the crowd in the opposite direction of the wrecked Explorer. News reporters intercepted men out of the crowd for interviews. One of the reporters looked my way, and I ducked behind the chunky black man who was a cross between Biggie Smalls and the Black Buddha. "You again, huh?" he said. The reporter called over to him. "Excuse me, sir, can you tell me about what happened here tonight?" "Shit, can I?" He turned away from me like I never even existed. "I'll tell you all about it." I walked a block up the street, looking over my shoulder at the accident. A tow truck had arrived and was loading the Explorer onto the back. Carl's cell phone vibrated in my pocket. "Yo, speak." "Rob?" It was Cynthia. My voice went hoarse and I coughed into the phone. "What happened to you?" she said. "What happened to me? What happened to you? What are you talking about?" "I know you went into the bathroom with another guy, Cynthia. The bartender told me." She didn't answer and there was a long pause. "Uh-huh, that's what I thought," I said. "I only went in there because he offered some coke. Nothing happened." Her voice lightened up. "I just did a little coke and we kissed a little. Rob, can we talk this out, please? Will you come to my apartment so we can talk?" "Fine, let's talk," I said. 1:54 a.m. I stood at the front gate to Cynthia's apartment complex, working up the courage again to buzz her over the call box. "Rob, is that you?" her voice blared over the box. I saw her face poke through the curtains in the same dark window on the second floor. The gate buzzed and I opened it. I walked around to her apartment. She stood in the doorway, waving me up. "I'm glad you decided to come over," she said. She wore an extra-large t-shirt with the wolf silkscreen on the front. The t-shirt covered up above her knees and hung loose over her left shoulder. "Make yourself at home while I freshen up in the bathroom." She had an economy-sized 15-inch Toshiba set on top of an IKEA Grevbach TV bench. I looked around for the remote. I opened the drawer in the Grevbach and there was a stash of DVDs inside. The Big Sleep, Shock Corridor, La Dolce Vita, The Music Lovers, Super Vixens, Written on the Wind, Shivers, Under the Skin. "Everything okay?" she said from the bathroom. "Yeah, everything's fine," I said. I saw the vanity in my peripheral and the collage of color photos taped along the edges. I snuck past the bathroom into the master bedroom. The photos were pictures of all the men she had been with. Some were mugshots, but most were captured in mid-sex. Captioned in black Sharpie pen under each photo were different names. Mary Lee Hadley, Carmen Sternwood, Constance Towers, Madalena. One of the photos showed her face down over Tony's bare lap with the name Iris Kelly written at the bottom. Taped to the glass, isolated from the others, was the photo she had taken of me at the bar. "What are you doing in here?" she said from the doorway. I ripped the photo of me off the glass. "What the fuck is this, Cynthia?" She hammered at my chest with her fists. I grabbed her wrists and threw her down on the bed. "Get the fuck out of my apartment," she jumped up, pushing me toward the door. "Get the fuck out of my apartment, cocksucker. Get the fuck out." She opened the door and I stopped in the doorway. "You know, Cynthia, I thought you were my second chance at starting over. I thought if we got together, maybe it'd erase all the bad shit that happened in my life over the past year." The scowl faded from her face. "But I was wrong," I said. "There are no second chances. I can't start over because I can't undo the past or change what's happened tonight. All I can do is move forward." "Rob, wait. I'm sorry," she said. She dragged her finger down my stomach to my crotch. "Maybe you're right. Do you still have those cigarettes I asked for?" "Yeah," I showed her the pack of Virginia Slims. "Thanks, Tiger." She took the pack, then took a step back. "Now get the fuck out." She lunged forward, shoving me through the doorway. I tumbled down the steps and she slammed the door shut. 4:03 a.m. I walked the streets for hours. The coke and the tequila wore off. My head cleared. I stopped at a bus stop and looked around. Twin circles of light appeared down the street as the lights of a city bus loomed into view. The bus slowed with a whiny screech. The door opened with a hiss of air. The harsh white light of the interior spilled out of the door, a lit box looking out on the quasi-light of the nightlife. I climbed the steps. The rest of the bus was empty. I fed $1.75 into the fare box, looked at the lights, and cringed. I sat at the back of the bus and pulled out the paper bag filled with money. Malcolm had left the second bag behind at NJ Liquor, and I had stuffed it down the front of my jeans. I thought back to the conversation in Malcolm's bedroom, wondering if he got back into school. A week later, I'd get a letter in the mail with no return address and a University of Florida brochure inside. I thumbed through the bills. The second bag was the smaller of the two, but there was still close to a grand inside. Outside the windows, the streets blurred in a perpetual motion trail of glowing color and light, and the nightlife ebbed away. The streets knew everything, saw everything. They had wisdom beyond their years. In every layer, in every crack, in every shoe scuff, in every piece of discarded trash. They were empty, yet filled with all the echoes of all the people in passing. The stains from grease and vomit and blood welled louder than any person or honking horn. The first light crested the horizon when I opened my apartment door. My digital alarm clock read 7:08 a.m. I set the paper bag of money next to the phone. The light blinked on the answering machine and I pressed the play button. There was a long beep, then Carl's voice. I emptied my pockets and the bullet of Chernobyl Coke fell out. "Hey, bro," he shouted over the crowd at the Stardust. "I'm calling from a payphone. You still have my cell phone. Where are you, man? I looked for you at the club and you're gone. I just want to say, thanks for clubbing with me tonight, bro. I know you want things to go back to the way they were when Sarah was around. That's why I introduced you to Cynthia. Also, I think maybe it's time I clean up my act, too. Hey, that's what friends are for, like the song, right?" There was another long beep. I flattened out the wadded Audio Express job application and looked at it. I dropped the application back on the floor, walked into the bathroom to the toilet. I unscrewed the top of the bullet, hesitated, then screwed it back on. I held the bullet out over the toilet, staring at the Coke inside.
I'm
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by The Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.